welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm pleased to have back as my guest Dr. Jill Carnahan. Dr. Jill is a functional medicine expert and integrative holistic doctor who is exploring the cause of many diseases and the treatments outside of traditional medicine. And today we're going to talk a little bit more about mold. She had published in her newsletter on functional medicine a very good article on mold biotoxins. And I don't think the public, because mold is so politically incorrect, especially because it affects the food industry, the breast implant industry, and the building industry, construction, government buildings. Anybody who publishes on mold in general has lost their medical license or has been invited to surrender their medical license. That's how they do it. And so this is a very politically incorrect disease, and most doctors that I've talked to have no idea that mold can make one sick. So Dr. Jill is going to educate us today on the kind of illnesses that mold biotoxins can cause and what factors factor into that. Genetics is a big one, as are other things, and help protect you and your family against mold, especially in the food. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Jill.
Thanks so much, Dr. Kolb, for having me. I always enjoy talking about these things with you.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
It is. It really is.
We both learn. Okay, well, you want to, introduce the topic of mold, where we get exposed to it, and then, I guess, a little bit about what kind of symptoms one has if one cannot get rid of the biotoxin.
You bet. So this is, like you said, a topic that even a lot of integrative and functional medicine physicians and for sure patients don't understand how serious it can be. And just very, very briefly, I had my own story in 2014. I found out my building I was working in was massively water damaged, and I started getting sick. And for me, it presented with immune deficiency and respiratory symptoms and sinus congestion and skin rashes and eye red blurry vision and that kind of thing. And I knew that it could be some sort of toxic exposure, but I kind of was in denial for a while because I knew it meant either home or workplace and probably a move. Finally, when I tested, I found that there was mold in the building and it was making me sick. And I literally left my practice, left everything in it except my patient records and started over. And that's how I got well. And I'm, 100% better today. But what it does is it really, really impacts the body in those who are genetically susceptible. And that's probably the first thing that we should start with is susceptibility. So about 25% or 1 in 4 of the population is susceptible. And what that means is their genetics, their HLA types, these are like sampling cells of the immune system. And what we know about this is basically these are the arms that reach out and say, is this a friend or foe? And if it finds a parasite or an infection or a toxin, it tags it and allows the body to try to eradicate it. In these patients, the 25% that are susceptible, they have a difficult time tagging toxic exposures like biotoxins, like mold, and so they can't get rid of it, and it causes collateral damage in the body as it presents this vicious cycle in the immune system. So those 1 in 4 patients who are in a moldy building can get very, very sick, while the rest of the building, the rest of the inhabitants, the rest of the family in the house are perfectly fine.
And basically, Dr. Shoemaker, who wrote a book called Mold Warriors and another one called Surviving Mold, is famous for the phrase sicker, quicker. You want to explain that one?
You bet. So what that happens is this is not a dose-dependent toxic exposure. Many of our toxic exposures, some of the curves that we use to determine toxicity of a drug or a chemical is a linear or exponential curve where as you get more exposure, you get more and more sick. With this kind of toxic exposure, it's a multitude of things in a water-damaged building. So say there's a leak under your sink or your washer or dryer, or there's a flood in your basement or a hurricane which lets water in the windows, whatever has happened to allow water intrusion into the building. Nowadays, our buildings are built with these materials like drywall that are very porous and can take on water and then grow mold later on. And then what happens is that mold growth causes toxic chemicals, toxic VOCs, volatile organic solvents, bacterial inflammagens, and all kinds of things. It's like a toxic soup that comes from water damage. And all of those chemicals and toxins that are produced by mold and bacteria can cause damage to the human body. And what the sicker quicker means is that it doesn't take very much at all in someone who is sensitized. And then once they're sensitized, it takes an even smaller amount to make them get ill again. So they can get sensitized in a water-damaged building, and then any subsequent mold or water damage exposure will make them sicker much quicker at smaller doses.
Yeah, they're building a building right behind us here in the office, and it rains, you know, every third day or so, and they don't work. But all that drywall is just sitting there soaking up water.
Oh, so I wonder
how many buildings you walk into in new construction, and you've got water damage just from the building materials being soaked in water.
Yeah, and that's so wise to think about, because it is actually quite common for things to get soaked and wet. And basically any lumber or any sort of a drywall or materials that are porous, if they take on water, you can actually have a brand new construction home that has a predisposition towards mold growth because of that.
So when my patients get mold in their breast implants, we usually try to figure out where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
And so we muscle test, and most of them have exposures at work, especially housekeepers, real estate agents, teachers, people who frequent buildings that are moldy because they're not well kept up. A few have it at home, of course, with water intrusion problems. And a lot of them are having it in new cars. New cars can have mold in it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
It is.
Or old cars, like if you have your gym clothes in the back, that was one of them. Scuba diving equipment. I do have one patient who got sick from eating mold in food, and we can talk more about that later, but eating mold can then get into your bloodstream and land on like breast implants or other foreign bodies. And gems are very, very, like today, the patient got her mold from a gem.
Mm.
So gems are very likely places. And I've had a number of patients who were explanted and got well, then go get, you know, they're feeling great, so they go back to the gym, and guess what?
Yes.
They're sick again.
Yeah. And that's exactly, it's once they're exposed, and like the people you deal with, I deal with the same, and they may not have breast implants, but they've gotten sick. And so they have to, basically mold avoidance is a part of a lifestyle in someone who's had an exposure. So now I'm 3 years from my mold exposure, and I travel and speak and do all kinds of things, and I'm in hotels all the time. I was just in Boston where there's a massive mold exposure. I can recover now pretty quickly, but what the deal is when you're trying to get well, and for me initially or anyone else, you really have to avoid mold exposure in order to get well initially.
You do. That's true. And airplanes are another one.
Yes.
Quite a number of people flying in to see me from out of state have abnormal visual contrast sensitivity tests, and it's based on the flight they just took.
Yeah.
Fascinating, isn't it?
They've
got blurred vision from the flight. Yeah.
Completely.
So it probably is very prevalent. And, of course, we have to figure out, you know, if in our patients, whether or not it's in the breast implants, because sometimes it's just in the environment, it hasn't gotten to the breast implants yet, so there's no reason to take them out. But it is a very, very complex issue. But I was so interested in your article talking about food. Would you like to go into more detail about, there was one article on the news where a teenage boy ate pancakes from old pancake mix and almost died of mold.
Wow.
Did you see that?
I didn't, but you're right.
Yeah.
So foods can definitely, mycotoxins in food source. In fact, a lot of the studies are done in rural Africa where there's mycotoxin exposure in the grains and the nuts and things like that, and they get quite sick. And some of the studies that I've reported on and taught on are talking about the damage in the gut from mycotoxin in food. So patients who've had a mold exposure, avoidance is key as far as buildings. And usually they get a set of symptoms where they start to notice. When you're completely in a moldy environment and you're very, very sick, you don't have the capacity to determine that exposure. But as you get out and start to get well, then you start to notice, oh, yeah, that doesn't feel good. So their old belongings where they maybe had put them in storage, or maybe a new building where they go in and they know there's mold, they'll start to have a set of symptoms like sinus pressure or headache or brain fog that they can tell. Those symptoms are usually an indicator of mold exposure. And the same thing with foods. If they're avoiding the environment, they're also going to want to avoid foods that have a lot of mold in them. So I usually put patients on a low-mold diet when they're trying to get well. And that would be things like anything with sugar, alcohol, fermented foods, high-mold foods like cashew and pistachio and peanuts, moldy cheeses like aged meats and cheeses can be a problem. And there's all sorts of things that can be a trigger for people who have mold exposure and have mold illness.
Yeah, you've got a picture of corn on your on your thing there. So corn, like corn meal, probably not corn on the cob that you're buying, and especially because you're dunking it right in boiling water, and any mold on it's going to get fried pretty quickly. But mold that is in stored corn and stored grains is the problem.
Yeah, so perfect example. I grew up on a farm in Illinois, and they, you know, harvest the grain like corn and put it in these big grain bins, and there's moisture, and part of the keeping it from molding is to keep the moisture content low. But it was so common to have pretty significant mold content on those grains. And on the farm we grew up in, it wasn't all organic, so a lot of it was going to cattle and animal feed. But a lot of those organic grains and corns that are produced in our farms are going to cornmeal or corn chips or human consumption, and there's a pretty high mold content. Corn is by far the worst grain for mold.
Right. I wanted to ask your opinion about something. You know, we use the visual contrast sensitivity test here, and what we've noticed is if somebody only has mold in their right breast implant or in their right sinus, only their right eye is affected with blurred vision. So the neurotoxin appears to stay on one side of the body. Have you ever heard that?
Interesting, but I have not. But I don't, obviously don't do the breast implants, and I don't... I never really correlated that with a specific side. That would make perfect sense to me, though. That's really interesting.
And then the other interesting thing is that if they, like, there was a young girl I did an EKG on today who's having surgery tomorrow, and her EKG is markedly abnormal with all these, electrical defects.
Mm-hmm.
And she was all worried about it. And I said, well, we're not too worried about it because we know that's the biotoxin from the mold around your breast implant.
Yes.
And it'll go away when you get that out,
right.
On antifungal.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
You know, we see it all the time, so we don't worry about it. But, you know, if somebody just went and got an EKG and you're like 26 years old and you've got, you know, rule out anterior ischemia, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. And yet you and I know that's uncommon and this is probably another cause.
Right. So, I got sick one time. I have the same genetics you do, so I get sick like right away with mold. I went to Atlanta Bread Company and had chili in a bread bowl and got deathly ill. So one of the things I want to say about more fast food restaurants is you probably should avoid bread in restaurants that may have the bread coming in, you know, on trucks and that might not be cooked there. You know, a lot of restaurants, they cook their own bread. It's going to be fine. You know, they're it's fresh. There's no mold in it. But any fast food bread, any old bread, you can get pretty ill pretty quickly if there's mold in the bread that you're eating.
100%. And that's so common. And other things, high sugar fruits can be a trigger for some people. So pineapple, mango, banana, melons. Melons are notoriously moldy. Grapes, canned, bottled, boxed, packaged processed foods are commonly sources of mold, especially tomato and tomato goods, because they'll take a truckload of tomatoes and make sauce out of it, and, you know, 10 out of the hundreds of tomatoes are moldy, and that gets put into the sauce. Baked beans, soups, ready-made sauces are all probable contaminants. And then anything that's processed is a thing that should be avoided. And then, of course, I mentioned earlier, cheeses, alcoholic drinks, condiments, foods containing vinegar, and any edible fungi like mushrooms and truffles, smoked meats, sausages, hot dogs, corned beef, all that kind of stuff should be avoided. Fruit juice, you've seen those videos of kids that, you know, the mom opens a box and there's mold in the juice boxes. Sadly, that's not uncommon, so absolutely avoid any boxed juices that are high sugar in a box.
Also, coffee and tea can have mold. I drink fresh, I get the beans and then grind them.
Me too.
So I think that helps prevent mold in most cases. But certainly old tea, old coffee can be moldy.
Yes, so and chocolate, too. So coffee beans and cocoa beans are in very humid climates where they're grown, and so super common to have mycotoxins and molds in them. And I'm like you. I get a coffee from an area that's known to be low mold, and I grind it myself, get it fresh, keep it in the freezer, and I don't have any trouble. But if I were just to go to Starbucks, there's a 50-50 chance I'd have a bad cup of coffee.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, let's talk a little bit about what mycotoxins are. One thing, they're very, very tiny, and you can't really measure them very easily. Real-time Labs has a few tests, but they're tiny, and they attach to the neurological system. And so they're sometimes very difficult to get out of the body. Would you like to talk about some of the known toxins and what they do?
You bet. So mycotoxins, like you said, are super, super tiny. And we always think of, like, say someone comes in to examine a home or a workplace, they're going to check spore traps and spore counts. Well, the spores are the larger particles, and they actually are the least likely to cause massive illness. It's these toxins that mold produces that can be in the food supply or in the air, and then also the VOCs, or volatile organic solvents, that are produced. And both mycotoxins and VOCs are almost able to go right through the cells, so there's not a lot of barrier, and we inhale mm-hmm. VOCs. And so these go into the body very easily without any, like obviously spores are too large to get through the skin, but some of these toxins and VOCs can go right through the respiratory tract and the skin and get right into the body. And then the body can't eliminate them. And as we mentioned earlier, these can affect the brain. Probably the number one thing that I hear is brain fog, poor focus, concentration, memory. They can also cause morning stiffness, joint pain, numbness, tingling, unusual skin sensations. The respiratory tract, like I mentioned in my story, is often affected. So sinus congestion, mm-hmm. shortness of breath, chronic cough. Some people will gain massive, 20, 30, 40 pounds in a few months because this affects leptin, and leptin resistance causes weight gain, and it's real sudden, and they don't know what happened. The gut is affected pretty dramatically. You can ingest or inhale molds in the gut, can have mm-hmm. increased permeability, increased food sensitivity, abdominal pain, diarrhea, gas, or bloating. Disorientation can be affected by the mental, headaches, light sensitivity, and then commonly fatigue is almost always part of the picture. So there's several different mycotoxins we know about. T2 is one of the most commonly known, found in corn, wheat, barley, and rice. This mm-hmm. is real common, like I said, in the farm I grew up in or those kinds of places where it's stored. And limiting intake of crops, I actually think, Dr. Kolb, that one of the reasons why the paleo diet is so successful and popular is it's grain-free and therefore low in mycotoxins.
I bet that's true, yeah.
Right. So I think a lot of people are actually feeling better just because they're avoiding grains, which are loaded with mycotoxins in most cases.
Right.
Now, T2 to mycotoxicosis is actually a pretty serious illness. A T2 has been studied for chemical warfare, so it's that dangerous.
Wow.
It causes
that dangerous,
weakness.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a chemical weapon. And it can cause weakness, dizziness, loss of control over body movements, something called ataxia, mm-hmm. loss of coordination. And you can get this through your skin, through the gut, mm-hmm. Through inhalation, and through your eyes. So it can come through almost mm-hmm. all the different tissues. And it can cause different symptoms depending on where it came through. People have mm-hmm. died from this. If they have just like you mentioned, the old pancake mix, something like that could cause death if it was high levels of mycotoxins. Very powerful. Tricosazines is another one. We actually can measure this in urine. This is one of the ones I had high at my first exposure, typically from mm-hmm. Stachybotrys, which is like a damp, wet, dark, sticky mold. That was the mold also mm-hmm. in my office, and it is a really toxic, nasty mold. It's known as an immune suppressant. It also causes mm-hmm. ataxia or loss of control over body movements. It can cause hypotension or low blood pressure. It can cause bleeding disorders. So the clotting factors are disrupted, and patients can actually have bleeding where they can't stop bleeding.
And do you know the treatment for that? Do you know the treatment for that if that happens in surgery?
No, what?
It's desmopressin, which is ADH.
Yes.
Remember, the leptin receptors are affected
yep.
in the hypothalamus. So mm-hmm. the thyroid goes, the adrenals goes, sex hormone goes, and ADH goes.
Yes.
And with genetic types certain mm-hmm. genetic types with certain mycotoxins bleed extensively. And I can't tell you how many people come to me who said their surgeon tried to remove an implant on one side,
mm-hmm.
had massive bleeding, and had to close it up.
Wow. Yeah,
and
that makes
surgeons
perfect sense.
Just don't know what they're doing. They don't know.
Really, or nosebleeds. I have patients that get into re-exposure and they know it because they have a nosebleed. Sudden, they can't
right.
stop the bleeding.
Exactly.
So that's so true. So
desmopressin is ADH, and so you uh-huh. have to have that handy. If
mm-hmm.
you give that, I haven't had a case yet within 20 minutes didn't stop bleeding.
Wow.
That's definitely
that
the cause. Yeah.
Impressive.
And know what's really impressive, Jill? When I had my anesthesiologist look up the mechanism of action of desmopressin to stop bleeding, it's unknown.
Wow.
In the medical literature.
Oh. But to you
isn't
and I, it makes perfect sense.
But you and I just
access
said what it was.
Affected.
It's the people who have the genetic predisposition who have been exposed to mold and then have surgery, and they
mm-hmm.
bleed.
Exactly. That makes so much sense.
It
I
is.
Love it.
Yeah.
And we'll use that sometimes for the orthostasis and stuff where they have, they're urinating and drinking a lot, and they have no
mm-hmm.
Vasopressin,
right.
of course. But I never thought about it with bleeding. That's amazing.
Well, I have to give my patients sometimes thyroid, sometimes
uh-huh.
Cortef, and sometimes DDAVP, which is ADH, or desmopressin spray, or, the vasopressin spray. But if you don't, then they just get after surgery, you can't drink as well as you can when you're healthy. So
mm-hmm.
they get really dehydrated because water just runs through them.
Right. Oh, that makes so much sense.
So the endocrine system is definitely affected.
It is. It's like that whole axis with leptin resistance affects antidiuretic hormone, which we were just discussing. So they drink and they pee.
Right.
They almost have like a diabetes insipidus. The aromatase is upregulated, so they'll shunt all the testosterone into estrogens and have estrogen dominance for men or women.
Right.
Men will have low testosterone symptoms. Women will have heavy, painful periods, fibrocystic breasts, fibroids, endometriosis, all of that kind of stuff that goes along with heavy estrogen. They'll also have... adrenal dysfunction, thyroid dysfunction, like you mentioned. It's like the whole endocrine axis is disrupted.
And do you know how many endocrinologists I've talked to that even knows what that is?
Yeah, not very many.
Zero.
Right?
Zero have understood it. And here I am, a plastic surgeon. What I do is I introduce myself as a plastic surgeon who did endocrine research at Johns Hopkins, and I throw out the names of these famous endocrinologists so they understand that I'm for real. And then I tell them what their patient has, and they go, oh, that's very interesting. I'll have to look that up.
Oh, interesting.
But they've never heard of it.
Yeah.
I mean, endocrinologists are not taught this.
No,
so obviously they can't diagnose it.
Right. Oh, totally makes sense. So there's a few others. I talked about the two main mycotoxins. There's a fumosis, actually, I can't even pronounce it, fumosin B1, FB1, it's also called, mostly in corn. So that's the other one with corn. And then ochratoxin we can test in the urine as well, and that's really common with aspergillus and penicillin. So that can be in, like, moldy foods and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that tends to be a little less toxic than the trichlorosazines and the other ones we mentioned, the T1. But ochratoxin can also cause chronic fatigue, renal disease, night sweats, fungal skin rashes, hair loss, all kinds of things. So those are the main mycotoxins that we deal with. And nowadays there's two labs, there's Great Plains and there's real-time labs that do mycotoxin testing in the urine.
Right. Yeah, that can be important. A lot of the problem, though, is that some of the tests aren't covered by insurance,
right.
And some of the HLA tests aren't covered by insurance, so this can get expensive to work up, and a lot of my patients have very little money left after being unemployed and out of no insurance and, you know, a lot of other problems. But there's no question that these mycotoxins should be measured if possible.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to mention one other mycotoxin, which you probably have not heard of. I had a patient who every time somebody hugged her, she had an anaphylactic reaction.
Oh, wow.
Guess what mold she had in her breast implants?
What?
Penicillamine.
Oh, of course.
She was allergic to penicillin.
Oh, my goodness. That makes so much sense. Fascinating.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
It is. I love your stories because you got this this perspective as a surgeon and seeing the implants and stuff. And
right.
I love that because it's so real and you see it every day.
Yeah, I'm going to be on Monsters Inside Me for the fourth time in 2018. So
You
go back,
Link. I would love to see it.
yeah, the mold and breast implants. They want to do it every 2 years because it's so interesting.
Yeah.
I also wanted to mention something that we learn in medical school, but it seems like all my colleagues who are plastic surgeons completely forget this, and that's the fact that mold can cause aflatoxins that cause liver cancer.
Yes.
And the mechanism is massive liver damage from the toxin.
Yes.
So if one thinks that mold doesn't cause problems, how come we learn in medical school that aflatoxins cause cancer, liver cancer?
Totally true. Absolutely.
Crazy, they just forget that, though.
Yeah.
It's like they were never taught that.
Exactly.
It's very interesting.
So,
yeah.
It is.
And then many of them, including one who's well-known for explants, publicly said, well, we don't see mold. And it makes me laugh.
Wow.
It's like, okay, can you see bacteria?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we don't.
It's what you're
there's no
for,
mold
right?
there because we don't see it.
Yep.
Isn't that like, I'm sitting there going, what are you, what you can see, you can see a valve defect in the saline implants. There's scar tissue or fibrous tissue or discoloration.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have the patient just hold on to their implants, within 3 to 4 weeks it grows mold inside the implant.
Wow.
So it takes a little bit of time to culture that inside. But I let them just keep the implants and culture it there. And then if they want to see what it is, then they can send it off for testing.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
So,
percentage of women do you find that have mold in their implants?
It's hard to know. There's one brand that have 95% of the problems because their valve is not very good.
Uh-huh.
The other brand rarely has problems other than with major trauma, you know, these airbags and seatbelts.
Yep.
They disrupt the valve, and then scar tissue gets in there from the, you know, the seroma will form around, and then scar tissue gets in. Or if the implant deflates and the patient just lets it be deflated, of course it can get mold then. But 95% of the problem is with one company. And they've known for at least 10 years. I know because I was in a deposition the other day, and he asked me how many times I was deposed by his company. And I said, well, you should know. And he said, I deposed you 10 years ago. I said, well, then 10 years ago I told you about this problem, and your company hadn't done anything about it.
So, wow.
So they don't care. They really don't care.
Right.
They have no intention of changing their valves because they, you know, they can get around with all sorts of other tricks so that they don't have to pay any money out.
Yeah. Oh, bad.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we, you know, we're dealing with. But we're also dealing with that lymphoma. You probably read about that ALCL lymphoma with textured implants. I've determined that that's due to a toxic chemical used in the texturing process.
Wow.
And one company has 85% of those lymphomas. So obviously that company uses a lot more of the chemical. And then in combination with a mold biotoxin. And I had two cases where I actually had the lymphoma. I'm sitting there looking at it.
Wow.
And but when I sent it in for pathology, the pathologist said the specimen was degenerated because I don't think they wanted the patient to know that, I mean, I think that they didn't want the patient to know they had lymphoma. So what I did is I did the surgery. I put them on a series of antifungals, and then I detoxed the chemical, and both of them are fine years later. So no chemo, no radiation, just treat the cause of the cancer, and it went away.
Oh, unbelievable. That totally makes sense, 100%.
Yeah. So I think we're going to find, once we are able to actually research cancer, is that a lot of cancers have that have an infectious component anyway, that mold can be found in a lot of cancers, and that there's probably a lot more aflatoxins in other organs than just the liver.
Oh, I totally understand and agree with you. I think it's going to be, if we really could trace it back, we'd find a lot more connection. Wow. Amazing. And you and I know this and see this, and yet the average doc, even integrative, like I said, doesn't really understand the massive impact of mold.
Well, let's explain to the audience why that is so. Mold is politically incorrect. Just like mycoplasma, because mycoplasma fermentans is one of the weaponized mycoplasma that's the basis of our biological warfare system. So anybody that does research in that, not just is they don't lose their license, they actually try to kill them. So, like Dr. Garth Nicholson had four assassination attempts when he brought that to light. So, you know, basically, this stuff is so politically incorrect because industry and governments and other housing places would be liable for the mold in their place.
Yeah.
And they don't want that. And so anybody that even suggests that mold can make one ill is ostracized from the medical community.
Yeah.
I mean, officially tries to publish.
Absolutely.
You know. Dr. Jill and I don't try to publish. We just try to educate people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that you have to, like, tiptoe around. But my first case that really educated me about mold and got me introduced to Dr. Richie Shoemaker was a CDC employee. The CDC was a sick building. Yeah,
wow.
Here in Atlanta. She didn't have breast implants. But I guess... I needed to learn about mold, and so she was sent to me. She was a wealth of information, as most CDC employees are. They research the hell out of everything.
Yes.
And so she just came with all this information and got me in touch with Dr. Shoemaker. I interviewed him a couple of times on my radio show. I knew Andrew Campbell. I knew other people that were involved in exposing the mold problems. And, of course, pretty much all of them that tried to publish lost their medical license.
So sad. The truth gets punished. But it is a fact of our society, isn't it?
It is. Well, hopefully in the next few months, maybe that things will come down to reversing that. And maybe we can actually have honesty in medicine rather than what we have now, which is no better than drug pushers for big pharma. Seems like that's mostly what medicine is these days. So... Well, would you like to tell us a little bit about how you detox biotoxins in your patients.
Sure. So the first thing is kind of figuring out if they have that issue, and you do this in your office as well, but my screening tools are a symptom checklist and a visual contrast study. And if they fail both of those, basically have enough symptoms that are positive, as some of the ones I mentioned earlier, and then if they have a failed visual contrast, then I'll go further. And I'll do lab tests that involve the immune system markers and see if those are abnormal. We test things like TGF-beta, VEGF, MSH, MMP9, VIP, ADH and osmolality, which is what we were talking about earlier, and then just some basic blood work. And typically the basic blood work is pretty normal, but as I see more and more markers abnormal with the Sears labs, as we call them, then I'll go down the path of treatment. And we can also test their home with dust sampling through mycometrics.com. We can do, you know, have an inspector come in and try to find out, because the number one thing for treatment is you have to remove yourself from exposure.
Right.
So if they continue to stay in the work building or home or wherever the environment is and keep their breast implants that have mold, they are not going to get well. And you really can't do a ton of treatment without treating the exposure first. So what I will sometimes do is if someone is either planning on moving in a couple months or planning on remediating, not everybody can afford to immediately get out of their house. So you work with them where they're at, and sometimes I will start binders while they're still in the exposure. I think of it kind of like bailing out water out of a leaking boat. You're not getting quite as much impact as if they were out of the exposure, but at least you're doing something. So the first thing is to remove yourself from exposure, from a contaminated environment, to get out of the house, get out of the workplace, and don't take the stuff with you that's porous. So you have to get rid of porous items like paper, and some clothing may have to be eliminated, rugs and things. You can often wash them. So if you aren't super sensitive, you can dry clean or wash the clothes and be fine. And then the very first step in treatment is actually some sort of binder. There's prescription binders like cholestyramine and Welcol that work. And then there's other binders that are non-prescription that I use as well. My favorites are charcoal and clay. And I also use glutathione because that will enhance their detoxification.
Well, let me tell you what I found with binders. Cholestyramine never muscle tests well, ever. But Welbedix does. Welbedix was developed by Michael Murray as a binder, and it works great. So you might want to look into that, because it also is a weight loss supplement, which is a benefit there, and a fiber. Also, we get a lot of really good results with mold Sporox made by Precision Herbs. However, they were closed down by the FDA. So we have substituted yeast fungal detox. It has high levels of echinacea in it, and it's very effective. See, we're killing off a huge amount of mold in the chest wall because we're giving them antifungals, and to prevent that massive die-off, we have to use pretty heavy-duty biotoxin detox. If they can't take yeast fungal detox, we give them liposomal vitamin C and liposomal GSH, so glutathione.
Very good. Yeah, I love GSH. I love, I use ADP, oregano, caprylic acid, and there's so many different combinations. And then sometimes I'll use prescription nystatin or fluconazole, or atraconazole is actually more powerful against mold than is fluconazole. And those are tough because people can get pretty sick on those if they're toxic. You have to make sure. I have a ton of tips on detox and diop. I usually recommend infrared sauna, Epsom salt baths, ionic foot baths, lots of mineral water, alkaline water, minerals in general, Alka-Seltzer gold, pantothenic acid, molybdenin. I have so many different things we put people on to help them detox. And then drainage remedies.
That helps them with their memory. Because if they have yeast, that depletes that. So that's very important. What about ammonia baths? Have you used that?
I haven't. Have you had a good experience
one
with
that? This is all information from my friend who is an expert in mycotoxins. He said that mold exposure with high biotoxin level, you can take a one cup of ammonia in bath water every 3 weeks, and then if you have mold in your house, you can wipe. He says wipe it down twice. You have to do it twice with ammonia cut 2-to-1 with water. So that will eliminate biotoxins on any surface that you can wipe. And then of course you can wash your clothes with some ammonia. So ammonia is effective in getting rid of the biotoxin. The hard part is papers. You know, like you said, when you have papers, there's not too much you can do. And people who go and start trying to do their taxes and go through all their papers will often have an exacerbation of their problem.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. My story, I left my office, all my furniture, everything I actually sold, and left everything except my patient charts. And I had paper charts, took them to the new location, and my labs and my symptoms continued until I scanned those paper charts 2 months later. That was my only exposure, but it was enough to keep me sick.
But it's significant, isn't it?
It is.
It's very interesting.
Every time I sneeze, have red eyes, it was just those paper charts.
Well, it's true. Maybe paper somehow collects the toxin preferentially or something. I don't know. But yeah, a lot of people, you know, leave everything behind, and it's just really sad that, you know, we haven't developed more science. I'm sure there's science that we could develop with this. You know, like you could do some sort of misting procedure in the room to knock the biotoxin out or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure it could be developed.
Yeah, there's some foggy solutions that work really well. Citrus Safe, I believe, is the product.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the Thieves does too. Essential oils, you know.
I love
that. Yeah, we have diffusers for Thieves and menthol. Yeah, menthol. Mold doesn't like menthol at all. But ozonator is probably what we should mention. And O3, you can't stay in the building or where you're using ozone or have pets there, but O3 is very, very effective at getting rid of mold.
Yes, it is. And like you said, it's dangerous. Now, I do have some concern with my patients with lung issues, and as you said, they can't be in it. But if there's any sort of ozone, the patients with sensitive lungs may not tolerate it very well.
There's something interesting about the shortness of breath that people get in moldy areas. It's associated with lowered VEGF. I was operating on a wife of an ophthalmologist who had moldy breast implants, and she had had a retinal detachment. And I did not know this, and you probably don't either, but low VEGF is associated with retinal detachment.
Mm.
Isn't that wild?
That is wild. Very interesting. Totally makes sense.
So if any of your patients call you up and say, we have flashing lights, you say, go to the ER.
Yeah.
You may need a laser treatment like tonight.
Right.
Don't wait till the morning. Yeah. Isn't that? It's very interesting, though.
It is.
I didn't know that. I mean, I wouldn't have. I mean, it's a rare thing.
I wouldn't have put that together either.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's true. And I've had a number of patients since with retinal detachments who've had a lot of shortness of breath. So, again, it's that's more likely to be due to environmental mold. And the TGIF beta-1 test is usually, like, really, really high with environmental mold, but usually around 3,000 to 6,000 if the mold's just in the body. And I'm not sure why that is.
Yeah, I've seen, like, 40,000, and it's usually environmental, like you said.
Yeah, yeah. So the other thing, old-time doctors used to send their patients to Arizona and Nevada to get well. And they get well there. And I really think a lot of that was patients who had this disease.
Yes.
Because in Nevada, and especially, you know, probably in the 30s and 40s when we didn't have quite so much problems with water intrusion, but buildings were built a little better. When you went there, you really got away from mold.
I completely agree. Because even environments like, say, Miami or Houston post-hurricane, in the air, normally the air is diluted because it's outdoors, but some of those areas post-hurricane can be pretty high levels of toxin.
Yeah, I've had women get moldy breast implants from sleeping on moldy mattresses after they evacuated. They came back and, you know, went to bed, went to sleep on a mattress or where it was in the house, and they actually got very ill from the once it gets in your breast implant, you get really, really sick, as you can imagine.
I can imagine. Is there anything that clues you off to know that an implant might have mold from just symptom or history?
Well, burning pain in the chest wall, that burning pain is mold, as you know.
Okay.
Burning feet, you know,
you
know all about the burning
yes.
stuff. It's one of your mycotoxins here, actually.
Yes, exactly.
Rashes, unknown rashes. They all have blurred vision, nausea, headache, and then fasciculations. You know, back when we were medical students, we'd see these people whose eye muscles would twitch all the time,
yes.
especially in the lower eyelid. That was mold in the sinus.
Interesting.
We didn't know that then, did we?
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't know. But that's what it is. So instead of injecting with Botox, which is what they do, which is silly, that's another neurotoxin,
right.
you ought to treat the mold in the sinus. So. And there's nasal sprays you can use for that, too. Do you ever use the amphotericin nasal sprays?
I have, and compounded itraconazole, too. I use both at different times. I feel like both are effective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you used VFIN very much?
Say that again, which?
Verconazole?
Sometimes. I don't use it as often as I do atriconazole, but yeah, it's very powerful for the tough cases. There's less resistance.
Most of my patients that have mold also have yeast. So Nizoral and posaconazole and VFIND are very useful. VFIND, some insurance companies pay for it no problem because it is generic, but even if they don't pay for it, you can get it patient assistance. So you can have them go online and get patient, you can get 3 free months of VFIND. So remember that. Now, posaconazole, you can't. You can't ever get help with that. And it's $5,400 if you buy it. And it's called Novafil, but it's very good. Both VFIN and posaconazole are very good because they're not used very often. So resistance
I even go to atriconazole, but there's, like you said, there's some that I feel like amphotericin B is the most effective for tough cases. There's just probably the least resistance of that. And I've even compounded it orally. And it's very effective and safe, much safer
in the
than
gut,
IV,
yeah, it
which
is.
We would never,
absolutely.
Neither one of us would use IV, I'm sure.
No. Well, I think only infectious disease tries
exactly,
that.
Exactly, in the hospital.
But there's other newer antifungals, IV antifungals out there, so probably they would be used first. But, yeah, certainly. It medical school, it was called amphoterrible. So.
Exactly. I was going to say that as well. I remember that as
so
well.
It's pretty toxic itself.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, tell the listening audience a little bit about your practice, where you are, and how people can reach you.
You bet. So I'm in Boulder, Colorado. I moved out in 2009, so I've been here almost 8 years, and have a functional medicine consulting practice. So I deal with the most difficult, tricky, tough cases. People have been everywhere, done everything. I specialize in environmental toxicity like mold illness and infectious diseases like tick-borne illnesses, and then also gut issues, Crohn's and colitis. And one little-known fact is I'm a Crohn's survivor. I'm completely cured of it, so I know the disease well, and I cured myself from Crohn's. And then also autoimmune disorders are a big part of my practice. And we know what's interesting is mold can definitely trigger autoimmunity in patients, and I'm sure you've seen that as well.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, arthritis is caused by silicone, a known adjuvant, arachidonic acid, uric acid, mold biotoxins, wheat allergy, which genetically can occur from mold exposure, as you know, and then degenerative and fluorine and red wine and bad fats. I was stuck here during a snowstorm, so I ate some old almond butter, and one of my joints degenerated.
Wow.
It was like, I watched that. I went, wow. I didn't
Isn't
know bad fats could do
how
this.
The connection?
So we muscle test. Well, I guess it's just bad fats. It goes in and destroys the joint thing. And then very rarely, lack of joint fluid with and there's a Liprinol supplement. It's made from green mussels that puts joint fluid back in. So
amazing.
That's rare, but I've only seen 2 cases of that. But I muscle test for the cause of arthritis, and usually it's multifactorial. It's not just one. Like for my patients, it's typically mold biotoxins, silicone, and wheat allergy all together. So if you don't do all three, you're not going to fix the arthritis.
Yes. And I do have, Dr. Kolb, I have a free guide for all kinds of types of tips we're talking about for mold exposure, and patients can get that if they just, if you just Google Dr. Jill free mold guide, it'll come up right at the top. And if you don't find it there, you'll find it on my website. It's just Jill Carnahan, CARNAHAN.com. So JillCarnahan.com.
And I would advise everyone to get on her mailing list for this newsletter she does.
Thank you, Dr. Kolb. I
read
good freebies in every month. I just, you know, write good stuff. I know just whatever.
Yeah, you do. Well, it's very useful information, and information that because the patient's doctors do not know this, and it's unfortunately including integrative holistic medicine. You know, we were boarded, but we didn't learn this. This was not taught.
Right.
Because it was still too politically incorrect to even be taught in holistic medicine.
Absolutely.
And then autoimmune disease is mostly intracellular infection or chemical toxicity or sometime a combination. Like Wegener's granulomatosis in my patient was a genetic predisposition, silicone, which is a known adjuvant, and exposure to mildew. Mm-hmm. Mildew got in her nose, and then all three of them ate her septum away.
Wow.
And we were able to cure it because we knew what caused it.
Yeah, if you know the
so
cause,
there's Wegener's,
you get to the root, right?
And scleroderma is mold biotoxin. Something, and then my patient's silicone. That's the adjuvant. And I've had many, many cures of scleroderma. Within a week, their scleroderma starts to go away. But the point is, you have to know the cause of the problem in order to treat it. And rheumatologists have no clue what causes these you know, they don't understand that intracellular infections cause most rheumatoid arthritis cases. They just don't get it. MS was the same intracellular spirochete in 36 patients, and the scientist that discovered that was given a court order by the U.S. government not to tell any doctors.
Mm, how sad.
Yeah, big cover-up. Yeah, and she told me herself, Dr. Lydia Matman, she's deceased now, but she was the author of Cell Wall Deficient Forms, which meant she wrote the book on intracellular infections, I mean the textbook on it. And she was just shocked that the government would do this. I mean, she was couldn't believe it. But they were dead serious. So too much money being made on MS drugs to have the cure come out.
Oh,
huh?
Gosh.
Isn't that incredible?
It is. It really is.
Yeah, yeah. So intercellular infections are politically incorrect, just along with mold biotoxin disease. Doctors don't know about it. I've had the pleasure of doing Temple of Health radio show now for, 22 years. So I've interviewed Dr. Garth Nicholson at least 8 times, interviewed Dr. Lydia Matman. I've interviewed all of the people out there that many of whom have had multiple assassination attempts as they strove to bring this knowledge forward. So this is, like I say, this is very politically incorrect, but it's good for people to arm themselves with this knowledge because most of these diseases are very curable.
Absolutely. The more you know, the better.
Right.
And we're
it
doing
is.
Things
it
that
is.
Other docs are not able to do because they just aren't aware.
That's right. Well, thanks so much, Dr. Jill. It's been a great talking to you again, and I've learned a lot, and I hope to have you back on. We can talk about other things other than mold if you ever want
to. I would love to. I always enjoy our conversations. They're so stimulating, and we just think along the same lines. So thank you so much for having me.
We do. Well, thank you so much. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, Dr. Eric Love, Healing the Emotional-Spiritual Conflict from Within. Join us next week.